You're listening to Bigfoot Live, starring Thomas Gardy, the world's most respected authority on the phenomena known as Bigfoot. Sit back and relax as we take you on a journey into the world of the unknown. Believer or skeptic, man or woman, you will be mesmerized by real people telling real descriptions about real encounters. Fasten your seatbelts, America. It's reality radio at its finest, and it starts now.
In 1967, my whole life changed. I saw the Roger Patterson film on the Johnny Carson show. And I gotta tell you, that's the day I thought I was gonna challenge the world and go out and find this thing.
We had found like 12 tracks in the ground. I didn't want to believe it was Bigfoot.
There he is.
Did you hear that?
He's moving right now. He's moving right now. He's straight out of the tree line. He's moving to the right. See him? He's going to the right. He's going into the trees right now. Come here, look.
I'm Bob Hallmark, and I'm a reporter with ABC Television in Tyler, Longview. It's been my pleasure to be with Tom Scotty and his team tonight, and I have to admit that I was skeptical when I came out here. I thought we, at this time in our history, had the technology to be able to find one of these things, if it existed. But after seeing the footprints and the dig marks in the sand and what I believe to be a very large creature running at a high rate of speed through the woods, I'm convinced I'm going to have to change my opinion on Bigfoot.
I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized they were something special and probably Sasquatch.
When I landed on the ground, I'm kind of thinking, this ain't no human being. It's got to be something else.
www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
Animus wants what you think I've seen. Something strange, you know. Sasquatch sitting on his cypress knee, and he was talking to Moccasin Joe. Well, party they gonna have out in the St. John's walls. Sasquatch doing a brand new dance, and he called it the Bigfoot Stomp.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Marco Bill on the Bigfoot Live broadcast. And folks, it's that time of the week again. It's time for the Wednesday evening Bigfoot Live radio show with our host, Mr. Tom Biscardi. And now, everybody, the man who put the big back into Bigfoot, our host and renowned Bigfoot researcher, Mr. Tom Biscardi. Good evening, Tom. How are you tonight?
A-OK, brother. A-OK. I had an interesting week. As everybody knows, I think by now, hit the press and the radio stations and TV and everything else. We've been in Texas, and I've got to tell you, it's been an exciting, exciting time. And we have a few of the people who are on expedition with us tonight. They're going to tell their story. We also have one of the guys that that was responsible for getting us out there. I really like the guy. He's a genuine, sincere man. He works hard at what he does. And he's our kind of people, folks. He really is. He's a Bigfoot researcher through and through. He got there through... I'm going to let him tell you the story. Without any further ado, we're out here in Texas, and we're going to talk to our good newfound friend, Stuart. Stuart, you out there?
Yes, I'm out here, Tom.
How you feeling, brother?
Hey, I'm excited. Getting to know you better and working with your group has been very exciting and very fulfilling.
That means a lot to us. That means an awful lot to us. I'm going to let you have the floor for here from about 10 to 12 minutes. I want you to tell my listening audience around the globe, Stuart, how this whole thing began for you and how it changed your life and how it also came about, how you and I connected, and then how I finally called you back, and then we went out there with our A team to find out what you got.
Well, Tom, it all started for me back in 2013. We had moved up here into the North Texas area, and my son and I have done a lot of night fishing through his earlier years. Now he's married, made me a grandpa. We don't fish as much, but we were out in a very remote area of the East, one of the tributaries to the East Trinity River. And it was after midnight, having a great time, good father and son time. And at some point, I'm going to say between midnight and 2 a.m., I began to notice movement in the thick brush on our side of the waterway there. Didn't pay it too much attention. I mean, you have a lot of night animals and things foraging, so that it wasn't that unusual. But I noticed it slowly getting closer, and at some point, I got this unmistakable, distinct feeling of being watched, which perked my attention up a little bit, but still not, you know, overly excited or concerned. But what really got my undivided attention is at some point, I heard a very thick twig snap from being stepped on, and I immediately knew at that point it wasn't some light four-legged animal. Something with a little bit of mass had moved in. And so I casually put my pole up. I went over to the pickup. We had been sitting on the tailgate with a Coleman lantern fired up, and I scanned that thick brush line where I heard the noise. Now, I wasn't expecting to see anything. I just panned the brush line pretty quickly with a Q-beam. But at some point, I momentarily picked up a facial shape back in the brush. It was only for a split second, and I jerked the light back, and it was gone. And my son said, "What are you doing, Dad?" And I said, "Well, I'm just looking." I didn't want to really excite him or get him concerned. We're having a great time. So I put the light up, got back down in the chair by the bank there, and went on fishing. It wasn't more than 10 minutes, probably not less than 5. I'm going to approximate 50. The splash was like about a 50-pound child doing a cannonball off the high dive. So I'm going to estimate cinder block size object come sailing out of that brush line 100 feet away and hit the water right in front of us. Now, I don't mind telling you, I fell back in the chair terrified. My son, you know, was against up to me, and I'm pulling him away from the waterway. All my mind said was that was pretty big object, and if it hit either one of us, it had probably busted us up pretty good, and I'm pulling him away from the line. There wasn't any trees. There wasn't anything above us. There was only a low water bridge to our south. You know, I could see somebody pushing something off a rooftop or a tree, but it was clear sky above us, open parking area. And I raced over to the truck and got my .357 out. I felt threatened, and I legally have something tucked away for protection. And I yelled out. I said, "Hey, that wasn't funny." You know, I'm thinking somebody pranking at that time, possibly. I said, "I've got a gun. If you throw something at us again, I just may use it." Well, I was mad. I was frustrated. I didn't do anything crazy or stupid, but I cocked a round back, you know, single action, and I blew a round off next to my feet in the mud, straight down. And immediately, it sounded like a big buck deer taking off through the brush at a high rate of speed. And I'm talking brush that I would have to really deliberately navigate just to get through it. And this thing was flying off at a pretty good speed. My son looked at me. I looked at him. He goes, "Dad, what was that?" I said, "I don't know, son, but I said, let's go." So, Tom, you know, for a period of time, I'd tell the story. You know, it was interesting to other people. But I came from a background in a particular area of public safety. I've done a lot of documentation and investigation from a totally different aspect. That part of my mind could not connect all the dots. You know, it wasn't something I was looking for or endeavored to, you know, happen. It just did. So I wanted answers, and at some point I came across a website where a couple of fishermen had a very similar experience, and it was attributed to Bigfoot activity. Well, you know, to me, as close to a major metropolitan area that I was, I said, there's no way, you know, this, you know, Pacific Northwest, and I spent my early years out on the West Coast in the Sierra Nevada mountains a lot. You know, I could think of that, but not this close to a metropolitan area. So I began to make several Bigfoot conferences. I interacted with Bigfoot organizations a little bit, just looking for answers, Tom. Not trying to prove a point, you know, no agenda or position. And I quickly found that there's no unity. You know, a lot of the information is varied. A lot was hashed and rehashed. But what I really saw was a lot, when I would express my experience to a lot of people, there was no consideration, and it was kind of poo-pooed. Oh, no, that's too close to, you know, such and such. That, no, they don't. A lot of preconceived ideas. So at some point, I grew frustrated, and I just, me and a couple other close friends began to study that area and make trips out there. I studied the waterways, interconnecting waterways, and I know the first time we went out there, we found a log across the waterway, and people could say, oh, yeah, a tree fell over, but there wasn't any stump there. That it was carried to that location, and it was fairly good size, so I started in my mind, well, documenting this, we found footprints, we were followed and paced by something. It stopped when we stopped. It walked when we walked. Over a period of time, Tom, in that particular area that I shared with you is where I had my first visual sighting of one at about 150 yards. And you're talking about profound. I was scanning a tree brush line, and I saw this white glint of light, which, you know, doesn't match anything in the dull woods and leaves. And I focused in on it. If I hadn't seen that glint of bright light, I wouldn't have keyed there. Well, what it was when I actually got zeroed in on him with the binoculars, it was his sweaty forehead, and the morning light was reflecting off of that, you know, the sweat on his clear forehead. He didn't, you know, I told people later, I said he was light colored. He was a grayish white. And, you know, some of the people that I talked to said, oh, no, they're not that color. Again, you know, some people trying to, you know, put it in a certain box. To make a long story short, Tom, I kept an open mind. I didn't close any doors as to whether these were or weren't, you know, something that existed. And it helped me to realize that if you widen the box to all possibilities, you stand a better chance of having experiences and gaining additional information, whereas, you know, a lot of people in this phenomenon really form some really hard preconceived ideas, and if it doesn't fit in those parameters, they immediately discard it. And probably one of the greatest mistakes is among a bunch of people is the fact that, you know, why hasn't Bigfoot, you know, been captured, or why hasn't a body been produced? And there's a lot of real hard lines, but the evidence is overwhelmingly out there that this thing exists, and it's supported by one of the strongest, one of the strongest facets of evidence is eyewitnesses. People with no reason to lie, no personal gain for telling their story, and in many cases, people were worse off. With me, I'm protecting my day job right now. I really don't want the limelight to affect my career because of the fact, not that I'm lying or deceiving, it's just it's such a controversial subject with a lot of the public that they associate you with being mentally a little bit off, you know, or a little simple-minded, when in reality, I wasn't asking for the stuff that happened to me on the front end. And there are literally hundreds, if not thousands, of people in America that have the same story I do. I mean, people that bump into these subjects or have experiences, and they're immediately discounted for their personal observations. I mean, in the forensic sciences, trace samples, fingerprints, DNA are heavy, hard-hitting facets of evidence, and yet in the Bigfoot realm, Tom, there are people that have never worked the forensic side that belittle that evidence, and yet that is stellar stuff, Tom, that is proven daily in civil and criminal courts that prove a point in fact. And I've been fortunate enough to see these things. I've been fortunate enough to get pictures of them. And I've been fortunate enough to obtain videos. Now, have I had one come out and pose for a family portrait yet? No, and probably won't. They're very highly elusive, shy in some instances, and they are masters of stealth and using cover and concealment, which is one of the main reasons a lot of people don't see them. But having said that, if you know what to look for, you know, and go out with experienced people, they can really help. I guess, did that tell my story or position pretty good?
Well, I think you did. I think you brought it from A to P, and it'll be up to us now to tell the rest of the story. But there's a couple of things I want you to bring out personally, if you would.
Sure.
You've tried contacting other Bigfoot organizations. You see what they do and how they do it. You see how we work. Where do you think we compare to the rest of these people?
Well, you know, the first thing I picked up is the camaraderie that you all have for one another. I mean, you're a tight group. But at the same time, I didn't feel ostracized or criticized or scrutinized. I mean, you all took me in. We had dinner together. I really felt that you were interested not in any preconceived ideas, but you left open any possibilities. And I saw a very organized group that was, you know, you didn't take anything for granted and didn't have a lot of preconceived ideas. You went out there in a very professional manner. When we did our initial size up, you developed a plan, you instituted that plan, and I only wish that, you know, if my day job hadn't interfered, that I could have spent more time with you and learned more. But I was extremely impressed on the way your group functioned, but more so, there's a brotherhood with your group. I don't see that with a lot of groups that I've interacted with, very tight.
And you know what? That means an awful lot to us, and due to the fact of many reasons, but one in particular is, you know, you hear what these people do on the Internet and what they say about a lot of these groups. We don't care. You know, the only thing we care about, you know, who's really got the boots on the ground and who are the people that are telling the truth. And that's what we do is we link them together. And we come out, you know, nobody gives us the money. It's our money, okay? We come out here and do it with our own resources, okay, in the hopes that we're going to be able to bring one of these things back and prove it to the world that it exists. You know, you've seen it, I've seen it, my crew have seen it, many on my crew have seen it, and people just don't realize it. You know what, I was getting stories. People were calling and leaving me emails and saying, hey, man, what's wrong with you? Are you nuts? Rock Wall, that's a pretty big city, and there ain't no rural areas out there for these creatures to be. And now I want you in your own voice to tell those people who was telling me this kind of nonsense. When we went out there at the end of 205 by the barbecue place and behind the bank, in your words, what'd you tell us was behind there?
This is an area, some of it, you know, you have the dam to the north, but there's an area of the original Trinity River that has stayed the same. It's never been altered or moved or developed. And there are literally acres of land back in there that I won't go into. It's too thick. It's hard to navigate. But if somebody wanted to hide out there, it'd be the perfect place. And that was one of the reasons, Tom, that I picked that area, is that it contains cover and concealment, a lasting water supply. There's hog in there. Of course, Chico learned that. I mean, there's a lot. I've seen the ponds back in there where the crawfish have been pulled out and eaten and you know, pieces and piled up and saw it in the scat. There's fish that we found that had been eaten from the waterway. You know, Tom, this is the thing. This is one of my opinions, and it's not a proven fact yet, but probably a lot of people are not aware. My thoughts are that this subject or group of subjects have learned to avoid us for the most part, but at the same time live very close to metropolitan areas. I know there's a lot of sightings up in the north near major cities. And if you go out at 2 or 3 in the morning, even in a major city, there is just not a lot of activity. And if you're dark-colored, move real fast, and can hide, you could probably get some pretty easy meals from some dumpsters and trash cans. I know up in Hanobie, Oklahoma, some of the dumpsters up there are famous for dumpster diving, you know, late at night. That's just where this waterway is. There's two landfills that I've also identified that may be one of their little smorgasbords that they supplement, you know, their diet from the natural sources. And, that area, there's a couple other, you know, locations beside that I mentioned.
Well, let me stop you just for a second. I'm waiting for those two words that you really got my ears a-buzzing. And it starts with J, and the other word starts with a P. Came out of your mouth. Behind the bank.
Behind the bank. I'm having a senior moment.
All right, I'm going to help you a little bit, okay? We're there at 205 where the barbecue and the bank is.
You go
behind that bank, and you look out there to the left, and it looks nothing but like J.P.
Oh, man.
The movie.
Jurassic Park. Yeah.
Did that not come out of your mouth?
Yes, that did. Looked like you're looking into Jurassic Park from that bank. You're right.
Exactly.
Okay.
And when I heard that, I says to myself, oh, my God. Now, here's something else I want you to bring out to my audience around the globe. Does Tom Biscardi work outside the perimeter, or does he play by the rules and, you know, go to headquarters, go to ranger stations, go to police departments, things of that nature, to make sure that he gets the proper permits and legislature to get out there on these different lands and permission?
Absolutely, Tom. I wasn't trying to bait you by any means, you know, when we were doing our original. But, you know, I mentioned that I didn't even, you know, I didn't cross any posted areas, you know, or fence lines. But I knew a lot of that was Corps of Engineer land. And, you know, I said, well, I wouldn't tell him, but Tom, you didn't flinch. You weren't trying to be contentious or anything. But you said, no, unless you get formal approval, you know, and authority to go into place, and you weren't doing it like, you know, wearing, you know, something on your lapel as a badge, but I caught it very quickly that no, everything has to be above board. You're not going to cut a corner. And that impressed me. It really did, Tom. You know, I mean, you went right to the sources, got the, you know, the approval, and then later when somebody changed their mind, you know, you were quick to comply and didn't cause a bit of trouble. Not at all.
And you know everything. What? I appreciate that compliment also. And ladies and gentlemen, I want you to know this. We do this no matter where we go, whether it's Texas, Arkansas, Florida, Oklahoma, Alabama, and every other state in between, okay? Because we want to be courteous as people would be courteous to us, okay? And remember one thing. We went out there on a wing and a prayer of this man's word, on his pictures, on his story. And now the best is yet to come. But before we get into the next part of this story, let's go to commercial real quick. Go ahead, Bill.
In August 2008, there was an announcement that was heard around the globe. A promise of the end to an age-long mystery and deception that played out on the world stage. Anatomy of a Bigfoot Hoax. Now, for the first time ever, see with your own eyes and hear the true behind-the-scenes story of the hoax that gripped the world. Featuring original, never-before-seen footage. Available now at searchingforbigfoot.com.
One, they're very sick people, but you know what bothers me more than anything, Megan? These guys were the law.
And we're back, Tom.
Thanks, Bill. Ladies and gentlemen, you know, we're sitting here talking with Stuart, our connection out there in Rockwall, Texas. It's been an interesting roller coaster ride. If those of you who are just tuning in and missed the first part of the show, Bill's going to have this whole thing recorded, archived, and it'll be on the PodQuest, and you'll be able to listen to it in 3 or 4 days. it's been interesting in hell because of the people and the players in this game down there. The hospitality was off the charts. There was a guy named, was it Rudy or Chris that owned the barbecue place, Stuart?
Oh, it was Huey.
Huey, yeah. This man says, your money's no good. He chased us down. He saw us on the freeway. We ate there 2 nights in a row. We were his guest at one night. And food is just unbelievable. It's called Soul Man Barbecue. You ever get a chance, go down there and patronize his place. You're going to walk away saying to yourself, my God, it's probably one of the greatest barbecues I ever had. But it didn't happen just there. Everywhere we went, the headquarters over at the dam, the people said, oh, my God, I recognize you. I've seen you do your work. And they went into overgear, overdrive to help us out and do what we could do. And that's the part of the next story I'm going to tell you. And stay with me, Stuart.
Sure will.
They couldn't get me on the Corps of Engineers land, but one going right over the two-lane freeway happened to be an area that was leased out by her brother-in-law. He was the overseer. And it's about 800 acres. And they had, they were doing some crops of corn. So you got to understand, I got my two top guys from Arkansas, the Swede and Rocky, and I got Chico, and I've got Fernando and myself, and we went out and surveyed the area at nighttime, believe it or not, with Stuart. And Stuart didn't know how vast the area really was because he paid attention strictly to the bridge and the Trinity River. And as we went and circumferenced the area the best we could at night, I think we really got a better view of the whole thing. Well, Well, that next night, we kind of left and parted ways with Stuart. He had to go to work, and we and Tail went out to this area. Well, Rocky and the Swede and myself and Fernando and Chico looked for the best area possible. And at this point in time, what I want to do is I want to bring on the Swede and Rocky. You guys there?
You bet we're here.
Yeah, we're here.
How you doing, fellas?
We're doing good.
I'm glad to hear it. So why don't you guys do it one at a time about setting up the camp the first night, and tell the listeners out there exactly what happened.
Well, first I want to tell them what a great time we had. We met some really good people, Stuart, Huey, Guido, or no, not Guido, I can't remember his name, Luigi. We had a great time there, and we had a great crew there. And I want to tell everybody that when you travel with Tom, it's not fly by night in any way. Tom takes good care of his people. I just want everybody to know that Tom's the most gracious host that you'll find. And I want to thank him, Swede. I want to thank Tom for the jacket.
I knew that was coming.
Oh, I hope Swede ain't that close to you. I know he's going to be hitting you in the head.
he won't let it go, will he, Tom?
No, he won't, Swede.
No, I wanted to thank Tom so much, you know, for the birthday dinner and all and everything. That was really that was really a cool thing, Tom. I appreciate you, you know, going the extra mile of that. Didn't have to. I had the great birthday party and great birthday trip just being with my best friend Rocky, and then getting to hang out with you and do some the expedition in tow with Stuart's information and all that. Was and then Tom gave me the big plus for the big birthday scene at the barbecue, and it was totally awesome. It was over the top. We you know, we had a little bit of a struggle, and we had a little bit of a setback with Tractor Boy. But beyond that, it was a great trip, and we had some exciting stuff after the baiting situation too. And I'll stop there and let Rocky go on with that from that point.
Well, me and the Swede, we set up our camp, and Tom and Chico and Fernando, they went and looked some of the area over while we were setting up. They came back, and we all went out and we set bait. And we set out trail cameras, and we generally just did that. We investigated the area as best we could at the time, and just kind of settled back for the night. We went late, and then we came back. We settled in for the night, and we had our night vision out, and the Swede, he went deep south, but I went a little bit deeper south, and we hid out each one of us hid out in our little areas in the brush. About midnight, I got a little call on the radio from the Swede, asking me if I heard anything, and right at the time I hadn't. He said that he saw some hogs come past him, just flying low, so they acting like something was chasing them. And a few minutes later, I was about 200 yards to the south of him, 200 or 300. And there were some hogs come past me. We'd seen probably 15 all told, but the three in that, over where we were, they came by running, I mean, really fast. And they acted like something was chasing them. I can't imagine why one would be running that distance at that speed unless something was, but anyhow, I told the Swede that they just came past me, and we just kind of let it go and was looking around, and then the Swede kind of contacted me again and asked me if I could hear the crashing out in the woods. Well, I've had a major ringing in my ears for a few years now, shot too many guns without ear protection, but I didn't hear it. Swede heard it a little ways down below him and deep enough in the woods that the night vision goggles just really didn't do him any good. But anyhow, we set it out till about 5 o'clock in the morning, and we came back in and took us a little nap and waited for Tom. Go ahead, Swede.
Yeah, Rocky come out ahead of us, anyway, he went and laid down, and then he said he looked up there. I was standing over there behind the truck and had them night visions on. He thought he was getting attacked by the aliens or something of the sort. But anyway, we took a little break and a little nap time there, and then Tom and Chico and Fernando showed up, and of course we were all real anxious to go to the Bates, but we had, during our night trip, we kind of diverted away from them, stayed clear, and we went and checked out the first trap there, and sure enough, like Tom said, it had been power washed off, so we kind of got some video of that, and then Rocky picked up on a little side trail there where the briars was kind of thick right down through there, and in the main trail, and then he found a little side trail there that was leading into it. Of course, it was a pretty good bait assault, like Tom said. You know, it was power washed off. So we had good sign there, and we're pretty confident we had a visitor. And then we moved on to the other one, and it was even more compelling. Over there, there was some impressions in the ground. There was some the sardine cans had been power washed and actually moved completely to a different location, still in the same place. The tree had been kind of, the bait had been pulled over to the tree, and the can was worked on, the peanut butter was worked over a little bit on that one, and it was all the bait that was on the tree had been removed. And so we moved on down the way there a little bit. Tom had some ideas on maybe setting up some, our cameras didn't pick up anything creature wise because we had not had our settings correct. But anyway, we kind of got bumped off.
Well, tell them the reason why, Swede. You know, the day before, Chico got confabulated, of course, with a boar's tooth, and he was not all there that night.
This is true. This is true. Yeah, I don't know. You know, like I said, Tom, we wouldn't even have fixed him up if we thought we could have barbecued him. But like I told Marco, we didn't have enough sharpening stones to sharpen our knives to get him put up for the barbecue. So we had to fix him. No, I'm just teasing. I shouldn't pick on Marco. I mean, on Chico so bad. You do that well enough.
Oh, come on. He's like sewing up an old leather saddlebag. he was too damn tough.
That's true. But, you know, you got to do what you got to do for your team members, and sometimes bad things happen, and like we talk about on footnotes, we try to be prepared with first aid and stuff like that. Sometimes it's not pleasant.
How is Chico's arm?
Yeah, that's
It's on demand real good, you know. They gave him a tetanus shot and put him on antibiotics because of the they thought maybe the bacteria from the hog's teeth there, you know, no telling what, you know, what he could have passed on. But he's doing okay.
Good, good.
Okay.
Good.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, let me pick up the story from here, if I may. We were elated, and we went scouring the area to put up more cameras and where it would be beneficial to pick up something that night there. So we all agreed upon using five cameras, putting them in the elbows where the river and the road met, and anything crossing by these areas, it would have been seen on camera 1, 2, 3. Of course, like Rocky found those five impressions in the ground, and thank you for that again, Rocky. We went back, and I said, okay, let's go back to camp. I'll go get everybody lunch, and we'll, when we come back after lunch, we'll commence in on getting everything set up for that night. Well, we get out. As soon as we get out by the main road, here's the Christmas tree lights from the black and white, the local gendarmes, and there was a black and white an unmarked backing them up. Why are you on this land? What are you doing here? And they says, well, we're quite obvious. We're looking for Bigfoot. You know, we had our sign on and what have you. And who gave you permission? Well, the guy that has the lease to it. So let me give you a call. He says, you got it in writing? I says, no. He says, well, you have to have it in writing or else you're trespassing. So we're back and going back and forth. Then Chico's in the rig and he says, well, let me take your picture. He says, no, I don't want you to take my picture. You know, because Chico can be an obstacle. Son of a bitch when he wants. You know, that old coot, you know, once a seal, always a seal. And he didn't care, you know. He'd take me to jail. So, make a long story short, the sharecropper there that leased the land was the guy who called and wanted us off. And the cops didn't want to hear no story. And I said, look, let me get him on the line that gave us the permission. That's the overseer of the land. He said, well, it's not going to do you any good. He says, the guy that leased it from him has the final say, and he wants you off. So he finally hears it from the guy that gave us permission. And I said, look, I said, if that's what you want us to get off, I said, we're gone. I said, I'm just going to get the boys some lunch. Said, no, go ahead, go follow through, get their lunch. And he said, I know that guy on the carbine doing on the tractor. And he said, maybe I can talk to him. And, well, it didn't work. We came back, and the guy stops us and says, hey, he says, you know, this is my land. I lease it out. I pay good money, and I've got people coming down here tonight with infrared equipment, with guns, and we're looking for boar. And at the same time, since you know there's Bigfoot out here, we don't need your likes from coming out here from California. We'll do our own shooting and capturing. And I says, well, you know, you got to do what you got to do. I didn't want to have a verbal confrontation with the guy. It doesn't do you any good. We go back and tell Hockey and Swede and had our lunch and pack up and we leave. Well, I got a little ticked off, to be honest with you. So I made a few calls. Well, then all shit broke. CBS, NBC, they all came out. And they all wanted a champion behind us. And that, you know, you come all the way out here to look for something. You finally find something. Now the guy's telling you can't go on there because he and his boys are going to go out there and get it themselves. Well, I'm just going to tell you, God works in strange ways. The next morning, I get a call from a police officer on the adjacent county. Mr. Biscardi, I said, yes. So and so. I, just last night, crossing the road, we seen one of these creatures. I'm saying to myself, oh, my God. And this is a cop. This is a cop. Been on the force 20 years and still on the force. Doesn't want his name. He gives us permission to go out there. We got some of our team members that's out there now, and we'll be going out there all week. So we'll keep you guys abreast of what's going on. But here's what's happened. We went out there. We did our due diligence, all because of Stewart. We know the area is conducive to where these creatures are. We also know that the creatures are there. We know that there's something large lurking out in those woods, walking on two. We also know that it's the migratory trail and migratory season right now. And right now happens to be an incredible time. I just wanted to interrupt you guys. Now you go, the show's back on to you, so you tell them what you want to tell them.
Well, the fact is, they're seeing stuff out there now because the Searching for Bigfoot Incorporated team went out there, and they went out there. We went out at night. We went out with the intentions of finding a creature, and basically what we've done, thanks to Tom Biscardi, they can thank Tom Biscardi, because I believe it was our presence that got the creature stirring to where all of those other people out there have a chance to see what we came to. What we came for. And, you know, the truth is, me and the Swede on the way back to Arkansas, we were extremely angry at the way that Tom was treated. Just by Tractor Boy and, you know,
yeah,
the powers that be. We're pretty put out with that, but Tom handled it graciously, and I'm glad he did, because he was the only one there that was feeling very gracious at the time. But had it not been for Tom, these other people would have still been stumbling around in the dark, not seeing anything. And I think they owe him that.
You know, that is a great way of putting it, and I thank you for that, Rocky. And I've got to tell you guys this. I've given, 12, 15 interviews. And let me tell you something else that did my heart real good. The local school, high school, you know, I don't think there's anybody in Rockwall that hasn't heard about this. And by the way, when is Thursday? Tomorrow?
Yes.
Yeah.
Tomorrow's Thursday. We're in the Rockwall City News. You'll see some pictures. You'll see Swede and myself and Chico and Rocky and you'll see them there in the newspaper. You'll hear or read the story also. So you want to put a name with a face, you'll be able to do it. And the thing that wrenched at my heart, and it was just today, is the high school at Rockwall. His name was Jesse. Forgive me, Jesse. I think it was Cade, C-A-D-E. And he's the publisher of the school newspaper, and they asked him to get a hold of me and get it from the horse's mouth exactly what happened. I told him the truth. As everybody's hearing it from us tonight, you're hearing it from the horse's mouth, ladies and gentlemen, around the globe. So it's not bullshit. It's straight up. You're hearing it from Swede. You're hearing it from me. You're hearing it from Stewart. So if you hear any other bullshit, it's fake. It's bullshit. It's all straight scoop right here coming from us. And I honestly and truly believe, how we've, as Rocky states, you know, we flushed this thing out. And we did. Okay?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, we put the push on it.
You bet we did, okay? And if the truth be known, and the people who know what they're doing will realize and understand that we're here to do one thing, okay? We're here to prove to the world that, hey, man, there's an unknown primate out there, and it's roaming our lands, our mountains, our gullies, our valleys, our bottomlands, our swamps, and it hasn't been identified yet. And it takes people like ourselves to come out there and prove it to the world. It's a, that simple of a deal. Now, I'm going to change the note on this whole conversation real quick because my brother in Swede, I want you to know something, Swede. You're so damn big that they had to order. They didn't have it in stock. A triple XL with long sleeves.
So it's
going to take them 10 days to 2 weeks before we get the coat, and then they'll do all the work on it, and then I'll get it out to you. But I just want you to know that. Why do you have to be so damn big?
You know how it is with the, you know, Mama fixed me too much groceries, I guess. I don't know.
Well, Tom, it's all right because I let him look at me walk around in my...
Hey,
boys, he don't give you any relief, does he?
No, he don't. Hey, I've got to do a little shout out. You know, Tom, we've got, you know, we had such a good time, like Rocky said, you know, and you said too, and all the people down there were very gracious. We met a lot of good people, walked right up on the street to us, and held conversations. We visited, and we had a good time. You know, minus the one turd in the punch bowl there, but you know, we'll let him go, Tractor Boy. He doesn't mean anything. But I wanted to give a shout-out to Cash, the young man that came that we met in the restaurant.
Wonderful.
He's going to be a future Bigfooter. He's already started. And, you know, we made his day. We signed his stuff. You made his whole day.
It was phenomenal. Him and his whole family. Well, my God, that night. Was that his grandmother who came back?
That was his grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
And stood up.
I want to do a shout out to Loretta.
Oh, is that her name?
Loretta's going to be on next week.
Oh, is she?
Yes, she is.
One hell of a gal, you know. And, I mean, their whole family. But you know what, Bill? I haven't had a chance much to talk with you, but I got to tell you, they came out in droves, man. I mean, they came out in the restaurants. They came out when we got gas. They came out to the. They tracked us down at the hotel.
Yeah, it was something that everybody, you know, there's a lot of people interested in it. It was all good, Tom, and they know, you know, when they see number one, they're going to talk to number one, and that's what happened.
So, well, you know, the thing that really blew my mind was to see the other Texas Bigfoot organization come out and join us that night.
That was nice.
Mm-hmm. And I think they were quite impressed. And I got to tell you, I think they got a... another idea, another look at Tom Biscardi and his crew, and I got another look at him and them, and I was impressed with a couple of his Bigfoot people there, and you know, and like we said when we left, you know, we all need to get together and join forces collectively with all the stuff we found researching, with all the stories we know and what we possess. And if we all did this collectively around the world, fellas, do you realize how quick we could come to bringing one of these things back?
Oh, absolutely. Tom, I want to say something. You know, we're giving shout-outs and all that. I want everybody to know that the main shout-out for me is to you. This has been this whole crew. It's like new family. It's not something that any of us have done for money. We haven't done it for any other reason other than just to show the world that it's out there. The people that I've met, meaning you, Chico, the guy without a jacket,
Fernando.
Fernando, everybody, it was a great time. I would rather be out with y'all than just about anything I can think of. And I want to thank you for all that you did.
And, yeah, listen, back at you tenfold, you and the Swede and Stuart and his lovely bride. I mean, the people in Texas, and I've always said it before and I'll say it again, they've got the large state and they've got large hearts. And, ladies and gentlemen, don't believe me, don't believe us. Go there and see for yourself, and you'll see how they'll embrace you with open arms. And my gosh, when the guy said to me, "We don't want your money here. We just love you being here, and we want to feed you, to take care of you, give you nourishment." And I never knew that there were so many religious people in Texas. What causes that, Stuart?
I don't know. I think that, you know, it's part of the Texas culture is family, God, and country. You know, it's real ingrained, and it's a pretty good combination.
Oh, you bet it is. I mean, you know, I don't think the rest of the world know of that. I mean, you know, it's just like they're all saying, well, Jesus, there was one guy that says, well, I live in Dallas, and I was growed up. I was reared here, he said. And he says, where the hell can one of those creatures be? Well, take 205, go to the end. When you see that barbecue place and you see that bank, go in the back of the bank and look to your left, and you tell me what you see. What's that word again, Stuart?
Jurassic Park.
There you go. And ladies and gentlemen, I've got to tell you, these creatures follow the waterways. Trinity River has been one of the biggest waterways in which sightings have been around.
Yes, it is.
And you know what, Stuart? You know what, Swede? You know what, Rocky? If it wasn't for these other people around the globe that have an encounter, that had a sighting, that had a manifestation, it would make our job a lot harder. But thank God for them. For the short time we were there, how people championed behind us, and they're still doing it. Like I told you, we'll be in the Rockwall City News tomorrow, okay? We're in the kids, the high school newspaper. I gave two interviews today on CBS and ABC, and they're all telling me the same story. Please, Tom, God bless you and your men. Have a safe time out there, and keep us informed. You don't hear that, ladies and gentlemen. You really don't hear that. But I'm going to tell you this. I've had one great time with a bunch of wonderful people. And they're not just people. They become my family. Kudos and salutations. Till next time, America.
Well, folks, once again, it's time to say so long. We'd like to thank Mr. Tom Biscardi and his guests and the Bigfoot team for joining us, and we'd especially like to thank you, our listeners, for tuning in. This is Marco Bill saying see you next Wednesday evening for some more Bigfoot Live radio show entertainment with Mr. Tom Biscardi and his team. And until then, keep the Bigfoot live and keep Bigfooting. See you next week.
Three men with a gold and a pack that they'd hold and a promise till the day that they died. Answers to the questions no one's found before. Driving determination, the only key they had to unlock the door. Monsters, mystery, legend, terror.